Welcome back. Hey, if you love Coast to Coast, you're going to love George Norrie's television program Beyond Belief. It's just like Coast, except with, well, with pictures, I guess. Great interviews, fascinating guests, amazing topics. Go to beyondbelief.com for more information and to register, and you can start watching episodes of Beyond Belief right away. beyondbelief.com. When we come back, we'll go back to Barker's Ranch in search of more victims of the Manson family. Paul Dosti tells the incredible story of his cadaver-sniffing dog, Buster, right here on Coast to Coast. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. Paul Dosti stays with us. We're talking about his amazing cadaver dog, Buster, who sadly passed away a few weeks ago, but has been heavily involved in locating MIAs from as far back as the Second World War. Now involved in the Manson case and going back to Barker Ranch and trying to convince the LAPD, I guess, to reopen that case and find missing bodies right there at the Manson family's last hideout. I understand what Manson gets out of, or what you get out of these communications with Manson, obviously. You're trying to pry loose a few clues. What does he get out of it?
You know, it's lonely being in the... he's in the PHU, which is Protective Housing Unit, so he doesn't get out much because if he was in General Pop, someone would kill him. You know, everyone would be the guy that wanted to kill, that killed Charles Manson, and be famous for the rest of their life. That's how it works. And but I want to follow up a little bit more on these Manson tapes. This is probably has what we want. And just this incredible, the families have asked to listen to the tapes. Deborah Tate has, and they know. Jackie Lacey, the DA down there, won't even talk to Deborah anymore because of this issue. And
we should point out, just remind listeners, Paul, that we're talking about the Tex Mason recording.
The Tex Watson tapes.
Watson, sorry.
6 hours of tapes reported down in Texas before he was extradited by his attorney, where the attorney says there's multiple other murders that Manson did that are described by Tex Watson on these tapes. And so that would be pretty telling. We're probably going to be the ones at the Barker Ranch. But what's very puzzling is the LA media. Tom O'Neill wrote an incredible article in Medium by Twitter, where you're a writer, you can write articles just like a magazine article, but it goes in this cyber thing called Medium. Not one single news agency, including AP, will ask the LAPD to go on record and say there's nothing on the tapes. They'll tell them that off the record, but not on the record. And no one in the entire media has ever pushed that. And they'll do the Freedom of Information Act, or what we call Public Records Act in California, and they'll say, no, they're investigative. But there's nothing on them unofficially. Why won't they release those tapes?
I don't understand why they want this to go away. Why do they want it to go away?
Well, Well, I can tell you, Inyo County, what I was told by a long... my friend has we have a mutual friend and who was down there shortly after the Manson things. And what that person told my buddy Steve is that the reason why they shut this thing down and made it go away, because so many kids from Inyo County in 69 were up there partying, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, not involved in any murders, who are now prominent people in Inyo County, that if a full investigation was ever done, they'd be associated with the Manson family for the rest of their lives, and they'd be ruining them, their careers. That's what this person who was raised in, grew up in Independence as a young person. So that's what that person said. You know, I don't know. But it's I can tell you that there are cops that worked on that case that to the day they died, they never talked to each other, like with the Sheriff's Department and LAPD. There's just a lot of weird stuff, but these tapes are the key. And like I said, I firmly believe, since Deborah goes to all the parole meetings, she has a right to see those tapes or listen to them. And they probably have these other murders, and they treat her, like a potted plant, and it's not right. And I bet if she got an attorney, which none of us can afford, and if an attorney wanted to make a name for themselves and got several other family members of murder victims on there of the Manson family, I think a judge would rule. LAPD's going to have to make a better case, and there's nothing on the tapes unofficially. But the complete failure of the press in Los Angeles is just stunning. To get them to go on the record and go, is there anything else, any other murders on the tape? No one will even ask LAPD, but you know how that works. regardless, even if you're with AP, if you embarrass them, your career's over there. They'll never give you another exclusive. You'll just get the written press release. And, you know, that's how the game's played.
It's a little like working with the for the Washington or for the White House press corps. Don't embarrass the president. They'll never call on you again. And that's your bread and butter. Yeah. Aside from the Barker Ranch, you mentioned there may be a couple other locations where there are victims of the Manson family.
Yeah, there's the person that told us about the girl, that Charlie and Tex took for a walk up towards the Barker or the Myers Ranch never came back. Also told, and it took me a while to get this out of our witness that talked to her. And keep in mind, this witness has known this person since she was a child, and said that there's three people that escaped in a dune buggy, and they went over Mengel Pass, which is to the east, and the family members gave chase, and what she said was they came back with a nose, an ear, and a breast. And so if you go over the other side of Mengel Pass, there's only two places to get water at the, you know, because it's Death Valley. One is Russell Camp, and the other one is at just geologist cabin. Yeah, they have springs. But interestingly enough, we went to that Russell Camp in 2008, and some guys brought me there, and Buster alerted big time there. And I mean, it was really strong. Now, if it's I can't say it's them, but, you know, it would fit that there's water there. So I can't say who it is. It could be an old prospector, but if it was a prospector, there would be a grave. And this seems to be coming from under the house. It's on an embankment and stuff. And we applied for a permit to get a soil sample there. And then the superintendent of Death Valley National Park said, no, there'd be too much disturbance. And in the rejection letter, and I go, we want 40 milliliters of dirt, right? A couple 40-milliliter tubes of dirt.
That's it. That's it. 40 milliliters.
And so where you pushed, this thing was carved out of the side of a hill with a bulldozer. So on the slope below the ranch, which is all dirt they pushed out with a bulldozer, that's all we wanted to do is get the samples there. And so this person is an evil, evil person. She's the superintendent over in the Mammoth Caves now. And so I go, oh, wow. So I have a friend who's a scientist for the Park Service. And him and another scientist friend, he lives near me, and we're up. And I told him about that. He goes, they lied to you. I go, what do you mean? He goes, when you're doing scientific work like that, the disturbance is measured in cubic yards of dirt removed, not cubic centimeters. So,
all right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one lie after another. And, you know, you wonder why. But I think it's, you know, once they say there's nothing there, they that's their story and they're sticking to it. And they will never be proven wrong. They'll do everything in their power because that'll define them for the rest of their lives.
And what about the poor families, the poor families that are awaiting
exactly
some
right.
kind of closure? They need
that's
closure.
That's what we work for. We work for the families of the missing. You know, the people that no one else will speak for when law enforcement gives up on the case, whether it's MIAs or murder victims. And we don't get paid for this. We volunteer. But by the fact that we volunteer and get to do this all over the world, we have expertise that doesn't exist in any government agency. And, you know, the proof is in our success. And it's very complex with the dog. Tarawa is easy. Barker Ranch is easy. Europe is incredibly difficult. And you'd have to spend a couple weeks with me here and a couple weeks in Europe to wrap your head around what we actually do and how important the dog is and using these other technologies as well.
Can a cadaver dog differentiate between human remains and animal remains?
Oh, absolutely. It's like you sniffing gasoline and sniffing a banana, you know. In fact, one of my training techniques is we have a ad hoc pet cemetery up here in Tungsten Road out of Bishop. And so what I'll do is I'll get some grave dirt from a human grave, and I'll put it out in the bushes, not where the pet graves. There's probably well over 200, maybe 250. So I'll work Buster all over those graves. I'll fresh ones, some that, like, hey, that looks like it's probably, you know, days old, to ones that are, they have little headstones that are, you know, 20 years old. And it looks, the cool thing is it looks exactly like a ghost town cemetery. And I will get to the point of this. So he'll go over all those pet graves and nothing. Then I'll, get him down in the bushes, and he'll find that little bit of human grave dirt from a 130-year-old grave. So that's pretty interesting. Then I'll work from, once I started doing that, it had an unintended consequence. Excuse me a second. To this the cemetery at Ballarat, which is a jumping off point for the Barker Ranch. And he'll learn on the graves there. So once I did this at the pet cemetery several times, he would only alert on two graves there at the Ballarat Cemetery. What's going on? What? And I didn't connect it. Well, we brought this device called the Labrador that was invented by Dr. Vass, and it's a machine that sucks the air samples up over a suspected sites, and it has a graph with 12 for 12 classes of compounds associated with human decomposition, and it reads them out in levels. So they went through there with the Labrador, and they found out that the first grave Buster alerted on was at one end. It's a small one, unmarked. That was the strongest one chemically. The second one he alerted on was the second strongest one chemically. So what I did inadvertently, which was a good thing, is that working in that pet cemetery looks exactly like a ghost town cemetery, you know, rocks around the edges and, you know,
right,
kind of,
right.
You know, ad hoc. You know, you've seen them before. And so I taught him to ignore graves and look for the target odor. And I wish I could say I thought of that, but I was just making sure he didn't alert on apples, buried animals. And so he just ignored the graves and went to where the scent was the strongest. And we saw that, you know, with the machine, the Labrador. Lightweight analyzer for buried remains and decompositional odor recognition. And if your listeners are interested in that science, if they just put in ARPAD, A-R-P-A-D, VASS, forensics on YouTube, you can watch a 15-minute lecture where you will see that machine working. It's pretty cool. He's trying to make a mechanical dog, but only does parts per million, and the dogs do parts per trillion or better. So he keeps trying, but he'll never make it. But he's a good friend. And so we brought the Labrador up to the Barker Ranch, you know, in 2010. This is right after they invented this thing, him and his partner, Dr. Marcus Weiss, both senior researchers at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And it lit up on everything, every site. So we already had the mass spectrometer analysis, which is even more, but even then. And then in 2014, a friend of mine, who I've worked in Europe with, I took this friend who retired from a very large agency, helped me out when I was started out. So we took her cadaver dog up there, and I just had her search. And I didn't tell her where to search, just search up this way, and her dog alerted 7 years later in the exact same spots that Buster alerted on in 2007.
Oh, I mentioned, or I asked about differentiating between human remains and, let's say, animal bones, because our webmaster, Greg Bishop, sent me this from the Coast Facebook site. Someone writes, "My significant other was personal friends with the Barkers, and he went with his family and the Barkers to the ranch on weekends for years. Charlie went to the Barkers and asked them if they could camp on the property, and they told him okay, not knowing who he was, but do not go into the buildings. But they did anyway." And then this writer goes on to say, "There are most likely no bodies buried there. The graveyard that they found and reported on as being done by sick minds was actually created by the Barkers and friends themselves in the spirit of the graveyard at Knott's Berry Farm." And then he says that any signals from the dog was probably due to old steak bones. So, well, You've laid that to rest.
Yeah. Well, actually, I had a case to do down for a large police department down in Southern California, and they go, this elderly man was killed by a caregiver, it was $500,000 stolen. They'd done 6 search warrants with search and rescue dogs on the property, and I happen to know the detective from another type of investigation we did together. And this is one of the largest agencies in California, so I went down with Buster, immediately got alerts. And worked it up, you know, you got to work it uphill because these chemicals drain downhill. They can go a half mile. So pretty soon I was at the neighbor's driveway, and there's probably 20 cops there between the DA's office, the police department, as well as, crime scene investigators and everything. I go, "It's either a dead Indian or someone put cremation ashes." And they're looking like the dude needs a tinfoil hat, you know. So the neighbor comes home, and he cops out to put his dad's cremation ashes in the backyard. So it polluted the whole area. But in preparation for that search, they said there's a horse buried on the property. So I have a friend who has a cattle ranch. He had horses, cows, and a burrow and dogs buried. And some of the these critters were like buried a year ago, so you know, 1,000 pounds of rotten flesh under there. I searched Buster over those graves and absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. But it's not difficult for them to, you know, and that's part of the cadaver dog test, is they have to discriminate off, you know, that he was certified in off animal remains. So absolutely positively that would be impossible. Plus we have the unique chemical markers for human decomposition at every one of those sites that are not common to animals. There's about 30 of those 200, those 450 chemicals that are human specific. And keep in mind, he got his PhD at the Body Farm, and hopefully your readers or your listeners know what that is and the significance of that.
Well, just on the off chance that a few of them don't, just tell us a little bit about the Body Farm.
Yeah, that's at the University of Tennessee. It's about 40 miles an hour from the Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And it is a two-acre facility where they study human decomposition. So Richard, if you were to unfortunately pass away and donate your body to the Body Farm, they have free pickup within 100 miles, by the way. You could end up buried under the ground. You could be on top of the ground with a screen on to see what insects do you. You could be rolled up in a carpet. You could be in the trunk of a car for a long period of time. Be fully clothed. Did a lot of hanging stuff there for a while. In fact, Dr. Vass told me and his wife, you know, the hanging people stink pretty bad, and so his wife wouldn't let him come in the house. He had to take his clothes off in the garage, and she had to hose him off, because it would stink so much. But
incredibly gruesome, but valuable work. It's incredibly gruesome, but invaluable work.
And if you look at that video, someone grave robbed a Civil War grave, and the guy looked like he hadn't been dead very long. So this is how they interpret crime scenes. And Dr. Bill Bass, that's B-A-S-S, is the founder of it. And he was the supervisor, I forget what the educational term is, for Dr. Bass's PhD, which is the chemistry of human decomposition for time of death. So between the dog that has 250 documented recoveries, the mass spectrometer work from really the foremost expert in the world on human decomposition, bar none. He has all four peer-reviewed published scientific papers. And the eyewitness accounts. The animal thing is nonsensical.
Right, right. No, I get that for sure. I know it's just been a couple weeks, but I mean, are you going to see if you can get another dog like Buster to continue
this work?
Oh, yeah,
we got to have a puppy. There's a big hole in our hearts over here. I am talking to a breeder tomorrow. I've talked to several, and when I tell them what Buster's done, they go, "We don't think we have a dog like that." And so I've managed to scare them off, but they've been very honest. These are reputable breeders, and I just need a good hunt, a big head, you know, which is going to be an English lab, and a big nose, and you know, a hunt drive and a play drive, and they all get a play drive. You know, everyone sees a lab carrying around a ball in his mouth. That's the play drive, but the hunt drive is that. I describe it as I take the tennis ball, throw it outside the door in 3 feet of snow and out in the garden, and he won't come back till he finds it. He'll tramp down the whole garden looking for it.
That's a good sign. All right, Paul, listen, we'll take a time out. When we come back, we'll take some calls. Are you good for that?
You bet.
All right. Back with more here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go away. All right, welcome back. We'll get back to our conversation with Paul Dosti, an incredible tale of his cadaver-sniffing dog, Buster, who just passed several weeks ago, sadly. A real hero, this dog. And Paul Dosti doing heroic work as well, finding MIAs all over the world. And then in 2008, called to the Barker Ranch, sort of the last hideout of the infamous Manson family, where Dosti is convinced there are more victims buried somewhere. How deep? Well, certainly more than three or four feet deep. That's as far as authorities were willing to dig. But Dosti insists they are there. I want to play a quick clip here if I can. And it's I mentioned that Dosti is in communication with Charles Manson, trying to pry loose some clues and some hints about where these bodies may be buried. And here's just a little snippet of a conversation Dosti had with Charles Manson.
I got your letter.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I I want to explain something to you.
Okay.
I'm not a snitch.
I understand that.
I don't tell on people.
Mm-hmm.
I keep my word. My word is my life. In other words, I'm a criminal. I never backed up from that for a second. In other words, I'm an outlaw, and and there isn't anything I won't do. If I make up my mind I want to do something, I'm not hung up to where I can't do whatever I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the life that I've lived is, if I don't do certain things, I'm in more trouble than if I do certain things. See, you can always count on the law. You can always go get help. The position I've always been in is not my own help. I have to deal with.
All right. There's a little bit of Charlie Manson in conversation with our guest, Paul Dosti. And we'll come back in a moment, take some calls, and discuss further the important work that he is doing to bring closure to the families of the victims of the Manson family. Back with more right here on Coast to Coast AM. And we are back with Paul Dosti, a retired sergeant with Mammoth Lakes Police Department, telling us about his remarkable dog, Buster, a cadaver-sniffing dog, and his involvement in the Manson case at Barker Ranch. Let's just leave Manson for a moment, and we'll take calls here momentarily. But what are some of the other cases that you were working on? I guess Buster was working pretty well right up until he passed, wasn't he?
Yeah, February 4th was his last search. And actually did one on the third as well down in Ventura, and we got a great hit on a. They built a building on top of the victim, but I got a great relationship with Wes Sherman Time, who was the one half of the Speed Freak serial killer team, and he gave us five sites out there near Stockton in the Delta, and Buster found all five of them. It was an amazing day. It was amazing, and we actually filmed all that too. I knew time was short, and so I wanted to get him working on film. And but that was a great day, and getting that one under the slab, and we actually got inside this back. That's actually a big warehouse. We got permission to go in there, and he was alerting through the slab, which he's done that on Tarawa too, because everything's built on a slab.
Wait a minute, even through poured concrete, even through poured concrete.
Oh yeah.
Underneath. Remarkable. Remarkable. All right. Let's go east of the Rockies. Victor is in Como, Texas. Victor, welcome to Coast.
Thank you. I can really admire you, Paul, with your training of the dogs. And I want to thank you for the MIAs and all the children that's been found. But if you're going to continue this, I think I know of a spot that would probably show up for the dog. It's related to Ted Bundy, and it's
is it in Utah?
No, it's in Washington.
Oh, okay.
And when I was a little boy, people on this lake called Crescent Lake, just outside of Gig Harbor, it let me fish opening day for trout. And but anyways, the people that lived next to a summer cabin was the Bundys.
Wow.
And the stories that I've heard from the people that lived year-round, Ted Bundy would have all these crazy parties and would actually use angel dust. And, of course, that's, somebody get a nail in somebody so they hold still or whatever you want to call it. But it's it was an old, old log cabin. I mean, it wasn't a very big cabin. It was built with huge logs, and it seemed to draw a lot of people. And it was right behind the road that parallels Crescent Lake, where the Bundys used to have their camp.
Huh. All right, well, sounds like a spot worth checking out.
Idea from you for more than one reason. The other thing is, so many of these serial killers put one in the backyard. Sherman Time had one in the backyard in Calaveras, and there'll be some more at his house in Linden. And this is a super common thing. If you look, talk to the profilers, they like to go stand over the grave and relive the incident and all that thing. But I don't know why they don't check the backyard or the front yard in the case of Dorothy Fuentes, who buried him in the flower bed. But yeah, that's a great idea. But any place where serial killers live, you should check it with a doc, and there's a good chance you'll find someone there.
Paul, is there a way for people to get a hold of you if they have tips, an email or something that you
can right now I'm kind of out of dogs, so I don't really have anything. But I have some ways of remotely doing it, and I don't mean voodoo stuff. But if someone has a specific spot with some that they know, or like say a well or a mine shaft or something, I can get a soil sample from that spot, and I can send it to a friend of mine down in Texas. That's two cadaver dogs. They're very good. And I've been doing that. I did this. There was a serial killer case in the Midwest where I was asked to fly back, and they think they're in the basement, and they showed me pictures of the house, and I saw a vent, and I go, just put a rag on that vent. It'll soak up those VOCs like a sponge. And they did, and sent it to me, and Buster nailed it from 10 feet away, so there's someone in the basement. And so I can do those remote things, but now without Buster, I can probably do something. I hate to give up my phone number and email because
I understand.
You know, that kind of stuff. But you know, if someone had a compelling case, maybe they could email you at your studio there, and if it looks good, forward it to me. And but I've been doing more of this remote stuff because I just can't be flying all over the country. And I'm in a unique position that I don't work for a search and rescue team, okay? And that's important because if you do, which all cadaver dogs do in California, you're forbidden to self-deploy without permission of the sheriff. Well, and so there's a lot of people that like to do it, but they can't. And so I don't work for anyone, so I can go where I want and do what I want as long as I'm not trespassing or breaking any laws, and I can help people that law enforcement, you know, can't or won't help. And so that's kind of my unique position. So there's a big demand for us, and you know, same thing with our MIA stuff. We found so many for so little money, basically a penny on the dollar in what the government spends.
And what about funding? Are you able to take donations?
Yeah, don't want to go down that road. I pay my own way, and I'm happy to do it. You know, I've had one big case that we had to do a lot of traveling. They gave us gas money, so I was good with that. But we do what we can, and that one turned out really good. That's going to be another story someday. But we basically, based on a sniff from Buster, we got a death certificate without a body and also with some other science. So that was pretty cool. Otherwise, a woman was going to lose her house. Husband disappeared.
Oh, I remember you telling that story in Death Valley. This was a missing hiker.
Yes. So disarticulated by animals and the bones are all gone. So anyhow, it's an interesting case. Can't say too much about it because it hasn't been fully resolved. But yeah, we do it with those kind of things. I just know the scientific side. So, and I don't blame law enforcement because no one knows what we know. It's such a unique little niche, and it may never happen in anybody's career that they have a grave case. And the same thing with the dogs. I call it a low frequency, high complexity event. That, you know, it may never happen in a detective's life in our career for a grave. Maybe they will get it too. And then they call, a middle-aged housewife, from the search and rescue team, who wanted to do something exciting when the kids left the house. And that's your forensic team to look for graves. And there's never any body of knowledge built up. So we know a lot. We don't know it all. We continue to make mistakes, but we learn from them. But we know more than anybody else just from this working all over the world.
All right, let's go to the wild card line, and Tom is in Cerritos, California. Tom, good morning.
Thanks for having me on. I'm a journalist in California, and I ran into a guy. Did you ever run into a guy named Father Michael Manning, who was the priest to Susan Atkins and Krenwinkel and Leslie Van Houten and all them? Have you ever heard of him, sir?
I never heard of him, no.
Okay, well, he just told me that, you know, that they were pretty secretive about things. I wanted to ask you, have you ever heard the rumors? I've read on the Manson case a lot. I know a lot about it. Bruce McGregor Davidson, one of the Manson family, there's some evidence, there's been some books written about it, he might have been the Zodiac killer. And when he went to prison, the killing stopped. Have you ever heard anything like that?
Yeah, I heard, I think it was on Bruce Davis. is what they
said. Yeah, Bruce McGregor Davis. What did I say? Bruce McGregor Davis, yeah. It was,
yeah,
okay,
Bruce
McGregor.
Davis, yeah. I think that followed up on it would not have been possible because of the number of them. He just couldn't have been there at that time. I think Steve Hodell's got a new book out, because his father was a Black Dahlia killer, but it is a very compelling case about his father being the Zodiac killer, where they had a cipher to decipher those notes, and it said Hodell as part of it. But it's I think it just came out here within the last 6 months.
All right, Tom, thank you.
Thank you
for that. Let's go west of the Rockies, and Arnie is in Roseville, California. Arnie, welcome. Good morning. Oh, we just lost Arnie. Let's go to Jason on the wild card line in Washington. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Paul. I just wanted to say thanks for your service and thanks for Buster's service. I really appreciate you finding our lost brothers in arms. And my question is, while Buster's out doing his thing, has he found foreign troops? You know, they're our comrades, and being a Christian, you know, I do love my enemy once it's all over. And do you have any stories about finding foreign troops? And that's
only particularly on Tarawa, I would say more of his recoveries on Japanese because their casualties were 4 or 5 to 1 over the Marines. And so we treat them with the same respect. We collect the bones, and then they're preserved at the police department, and we notify the Japanese government. They have a different cultural thing with them is they cremate them. They bring them to Japan and cremate them, and that's what they do. America and the Australians are the only ones that actually bring their fallen home.
All right, Jason, thank you for that. The first-time caller line, and Bob is in Connecticut. Bob, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yes, sir. Good morning. How are you, gentlemen?
Very well, thank
you. Thank you.
Okay. I have one quick question. It seems the sheriff seems to be, really involved in literally subduing a police criminal investigation, so to speak, even though he's not officially...
You have no idea. We'd have to spend another 3 hours just on that part.
No, well, my basic question is, has anybody investigated any connection between this sheriff, or maybe if his father was the sheriff, with the Manson family?
No, though he's the right age, and I have no information on that, but he was raised in that area. He lives in Lone Pine, which is kind of the gateway to the Barker Ranch, and I've also wondered, I wonder if he was up there as a kid, but I have no information about it.
Right. It'd be an interesting thing for somebody to look into, though, someday.
Yeah, well, if I drive down and ask him, I don't know if I'll make it back.
Yeah, probably not. You'll end up in a hole somewhere, too. By the way, I really feel bad for the loss of your companion there.
Thank you. It was tough, but,
Dogs. We have always owned dogs, and it's the only time my wife ever sees me cry when they pass away. So I feel your deep loss. But great work, and I thank you, gentlemen, very much.
All right, Bob, thank you for that.
Maybe something will come of this.
I appreciate it. This one from email, Paul. Okay. John says, can you ask the guest if he knows anything about possible Manson family murders in Santa Cruz County, California, along a road called Zayante Road? That's Zayante. This would have been previous to when Manson moved to Los Angeles. John says he grew up hearing rumors about this. Manson murders in Santa Cruz County.
I haven't heard anything about that. We do, the Spahn Ranch, we do have not murders, but there's babies buried there that were mistreated. And we found those sites, at least chemically and with the dog, where they reported to be. But the problem with babies is they completely disintegrate. They don't have calcified bone. They've actually done these experiments with newborns at the body farm. In a year, they're gone. But the decomp chemicals are still there. And I have a witness that actually picked up one of the dead babies. They threw them through the air to play catch with them, and they left them out on a tarp when in cold weather to toughen them up.
Oh, good Lord.
It was kind of like, yeah. And but the eyewitness is a cowgirl that was at the Spahn Ranch, and she finally, they told her where the baby graveyard was up on the hill by the Outlaw Shacks. And I got a 1958 photo and ID'd it. But we had great chemistry there. and but they just completely go away. And but the witness also, interestingly enough, saw Manson sell one of the babies to a couple. They arrived in a station wagon. The male got out, picked up all the babies on the tarp, chose that one. The wife came over, took it, put a blanket on it, and then started handing out bills to Manson. So that was probably a good thing. It's, you know, they had all these runaway pregnant girls there, so that baby probably had a great life, but from a loving couple that kind of bought the baby.
Right, right. When was the last conversation you had with Manson?
Probably about 2 years ago when the tapes came out. He called me on my cell phone, and he wanted to know what's up with these tapes. And I'm always very honest with him. I've never tried to BS him because he is so street smart, you couldn't do it. So my policy is 100% honesty, and I told him about it, and he really appreciated it. And this voice over IP phone had trouble getting calls from the prison, but I think it's working now because I do get calls from San Quentin. So I should probably reestablish contact with him, but he's not going to cooperate. He'll go to his deathbed without snitching. That's just who he is, and that's his values. But he is an interesting guy to talk to.
Well, Paul, listen, you've been a very interesting guy to talk to. I've enjoyed this immensely, and again, condolences for the loss of a Buster, a real hero, and so are you.
Well, thank you so much, Richard. It was great being on your show.
My pleasure. Thank you. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Greg Bishop, Nathan Staten, G. Lee, and here in Las Vegas, Mark Bonilla and Juan Chavarin. I'm Richard Serrett. Thanks for your voices, your beautiful voices. So long for now.